I'm Clay Pigeon. Welcome to the Wake and Bake Morning Show podcast. It's a weekly digest of some of the segments and moments that make up the Wake and Bake Morning Show on WFMU. Of course, you can listen live to Wake and Bake Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern on WFMU.org. Join me live every morning for the full show. It includes great music, chair throwing, pixie dust, and all-around good vibes.
Oh my God, the man is a maniac.
You can also hear the full show on streaming archives at WFMU.org/playlists/WA. Our Wake and Bake Animal of the Week is the cockroach. Cockroaches have existed for over 320 million years.
Aww.
They're some of the most primitive of bugs. The name cockroach comes from the Spanish word cucaracha.
What's a cucaracha?
It's a cockroach.
The Central American giant cockroach grows to nearly 4 inches in length. While the South American Megaloblada species has a wingspan of 7.3 inches. Hardy cockroaches can survive temperatures as low as 188 degrees below zero. They make their own antifreeze out of glycerol.
Formulated with an advanced organic technology.
Cockroaches live for the night and scatter frantically when exposed to light. They live only a year and in that time produce 300 to 400 offspring. Cockroaches love to dine on leather, book bindings, paper, glue, dead insects, soiled clothing, skin flakes, and hair. They can live a month without food. Sometimes cockroaches tunnel into human ears and have to be drowned and removed with forceps. Cockroaches are eaten in many places around the world. In Mexico and Thailand, they're enjoyed boiled, sautéed, grilled, dried, or diced. Pacific beetle cockroach milk is considered to be one of the most nutritious foods known to man. Cockroaches can continue to breathe if their heads are removed, their muscles spasming rhythmically to circulate air into their spiracles. Their severed heads can live on, antenna waving for hours, even days, when the heads are refrigerated and given nutrients. We love cockroaches at Wake and Bake. We hope you do too. Thoughts and opinions on the issues of the day that matter to us most. It's Quick Takes with Fabio.
I'm not sure when, you know, this happened, but I've noticed that in recent years, and for a while, really, people respond to thank you with, no problem, rather than you're welcome.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And even use it for saying thank you.
Thank you.
It's no problem.
Thank you.
No problem.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
I've heard this a million times. You go to, you know, go to your favorite coffee nightmare.
Venti, half calf, triple shot, half sweet, non-fat, nightmare. Skinny peppermint mocha, extra hot, with whipped cream to the nightmare. Top for Stacy.
Get your $7 frappuccino mocha latte disaster. And you know, you thank the server and they'll say, no problem. No problem. No problem. Of course it's not a problem. Why should it be a problem? Why? How did it even arrive at that? It's a gesture of appreciation. It's not that we're, you know, I'm infringing on your space or something, or imposing on you.
Old man, look at my life. I'm a lot like you were.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's not a problem, and it shouldn't be the response. Thank you, and you're welcome are the correct usage, not no problem. No problem. What does that mean, even?
Oh, man, look at my life. I'm a lot like you were.
Ah, Fabio, those kids on the yard. Oh, Fabio's always irritated. I do love him so. Pixie dust today, don't you? I almost forgot. How you doing, listener? I'm talking to you right through your speaker. How are you? In your car, at home, at the office? Are you tapping the wheel and just looking out at the world? Wondering what it all means? Wondering if you're far enough along in your life at this point? All the worries on your mind, let them fall away. Eh, what does it matter? Life goes on, one day at a time. Pixie dust, in the name of love, may you find happiness today and every day. You're such special glisteners. Here's Gabe Cohen, very special guy, introspective infrastructure.
For a number of years, a strange phenomena occurred when drivers parked in the vicinity of the Empire State Building. Their lights continued to function, as did their horns and most of the other elements of a car's mechanical and electrical systems. But every day, the ignition system of between 10 and 15 vehicles would mysteriously fail. Only to begin functioning again immediately after being towed just a few blocks to the east or west. Experts believe the problem stemmed from radio frequency interference being caused by the antenna-laden spire of the Empire State Building itself.
What the bloody hell was that?
Oh, a penny. That would have killed me.
Sometime in late 2013, the problem disappeared as mysteriously as it had begun.
All systems go. All systems go. All systems.
For WFMU, this is Gabriel Cohen.
Boys, turn that spotlight around and shine it brightly on one very special town in our listening area. Our Civic Showcase Spotlight Community this week features the Bushwick neighborhood of Brooklyn. Bushwick is a working-class neighborhood. It's in the northern part of Brooklyn. Bushwick's population, 129,239, and it's growing. Most of the people in Bushwick are Latinos from Puerto Rico and from the Dominican Republic. More recently, Mexicans and El Salvadorans have arrived.
¿Qué le parece la conferencia?
Sadly, over 75% of kids in Bushwick are born into poverty. Only 40.3% of students in Bushwick read at the proper level. Looking back in history, 1638, the Dutch West India Company bought the land which would become Bushwick from the native Lenape people. In 1661, Peter Stuyvesant, with the wooden leg, named it Boswick, meaning little town in the woods, in 17th century Dutch.
Tuinig met het milieu en goed voor het inkomen.
Farmers toiled hard growing potatoes, cabbages, raising livestock and cultivating tobacco. As the city grew, factories rose in Bushwick that produced oil, chemicals, big sugar refineries too.
B&H. Pure cane sugar.
In the 1840s and 50s, Germans ran 14 breweries in Bushwick. It was the beer capital of the Northeast.
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
As the immigration continued, soon enough Italians outnumbered the Germans.
Ah, buongiorno a tutti.
After World War II, middle-class families fled Bushwick, and working-class ones replaced them. Life was hard. By the early 70s, Bushwick had come to be known as a no-man's land of abandoned buildings, empty lots, drugs, and arson. Then came the night of July 13th, 1977, a major blackout in New York City.
New York City went totally dark last night, and tonight large parts of the city still are without power.
There was arson, vandalism, looting, and Bushwick saw some of the most devastating damage and losses. Today, the young professionals have come, and the artists, into their warehouse lofts.
Discover your perfect Starbucks coffee today.
A lot of notable people have come from this great neighborhood, including Mae West.
When I'm good, I'm very good. But when I'm bad, I'm better.
Harry Nilsson was from Bushwick.
One is the loneliest number.
Comedian Eddie Murphy.
I can't perform without my heroin.
I got to meet the man now.
Enough so I don't OD, but I have a good head.
And the great Jackie Gleason, another Bushwick native.
Where's the can? I got to take a squirt.
We're proud to serve you, Bushwick, and we hope you're listening. I am speaking with Ellie Irons, co-founder of the Next Epoch Seed Library. Ellie, tell us a little bit about the Seed Library.
Sure. The Seed Library is an artist-founded project. I work on it with my collaborator, Anne Prococo, who is based in Jersey City, actually.
Right.
And we are a nomadic institution dedicated to wild urban plants. We collect and save their seeds.
And why do we do that?
Well, we're interested in the gap between kind of community seed-saving efforts for saving food crops and the kind of doomsday seed vault model like you might find in Svalbard, Norway, where stuff is in the ground for ages. We think that weeds are kind of being left out of that saving effort, and we think that they have a role to play in making our cities livable because they're able to survive alongside us.
Right. Here at Wake and Bake, we know that certain weeds are very enjoyable, but a lot of weeds are considered noxious or pests. Tell us why weeds are important.
Well, when you're dealing with a city where the plants that aren't considered weeds, those that might be called native and are often idealized as the kind of base of a historic ecosystem, can't survive anymore, you're left with the things that have co-evolved to live with humans. And they're still doing the work that a lot of those plants that were part of our historic ecosystems were doing, producing oxygen, obviously, but also in a city environment, helping us with our CSO problem by helping absorb and hold water in the soil, hanging on to particulate matter. They actually are really good at grabbing those little bits of things that could also get stuck in our lungs, things like that.
Right, right. And when we think about plants, is it like animals where it's all interconnected? One plant helps another plant. You look at something like a mosquito and think, why are there even mosquitoes? Why do they exist? But then bats like to eat mosquitoes. Is it the same with plants?
Goodness, yes. And I would argue that they're just as connected to us as the bat is to the mosquito and vice versa. Plants have amazing interconnections among themselves. They're often also connected by webs of fungi under the ground, what people have referred to as the wood wide web. And then they're exchanging with us. I mean, we're actually breathing together with plants. So they're tremendously kind of linked into every bit of our ecosystem.
Right. And when we think about the Amazon and places like that with plants, there's a lot we still don't know, right, about the benefits of plants, medical advancements, things we might still discover?
So true. And so many of these plants that are considered weedy, also like those Amazonian plants that are still being discovered for, say, a medicinal property or something, that is happening with our weedy plants as well.
Now, everybody loves animals, but in the same sense, with plants, do they go extinct? Are there plants all the time that are in danger of extinction?
Yes, definitely. I mean, certainly, like animals, they're threatened by climate change. And with plants, it's really interesting because, you know, one individual over the course of its lifetime is not going to move, right? So if we're dealing with a situation where temperature is changing, it can't get up and run up the mountain. So we're looking at situations where plants need to adapt and move quickly enough to move along with changing landscapes. And whether or not that can happen is questionable. Certainly the weedy species we're dealing with have found a way to, you know, sprout through sidewalk cracks, etc. So they seem well-suited for these challenges.
Here's a funny question, Ellie, but I'll ask you. Do you think plants, maybe not the same way we do, but do you think they have feelings? Do they respond to human voices? Do you believe it?
Oh, man. You know, I think that plants probably have ways of communicating that we have no clue about. We're starting to learn about what their kinds of intelligence is. I mean, there's even areas of research called like plant neurobiology. People debate whether or not you can have something like that because plants don't have a centralized nervous system as we understand it, but they could have something, you know, way beyond what we're able to imagine. And certainly they can respond to vibration, and that's what sound is, right? So.
Right,
perhaps.
Right. Well, I'm talking to Ellie Irons, co-founder of the Next Epic Seed Library. Tell us how people can find out more, Ellie.
Well, we have a website, nextepochseedlibrary.com, which you're welcome to visit. And we have workshops and things that we do. We actually have a workshop coming up on Sunday at Smack Melon Gallery in Brooklyn, where we'll be out and about collecting seeds.
Right. Well, Ellie, I really enjoyed talking to you this morning. Thanks for taking the time out today, Ellie, and keep up your good work, all right?
Thank you. You
all
too.
All right. There she goes. Now here's Station Manager Ken with your Hump Day Hazmat Report.
Thank you, Clay Pigeon. Gresham, Oregon. Methamphetamine, cocaine, and heroin have been found in a Gresham apartment. Police were tipped off by a white cloud of smoke filling the apartment, later determined to be chili pepper and rat poison. Southbury, Connecticut. A tractor trailer has rolled over on I-84, spilling fuel oil and 5,000 live chickens all over the interstate. Madras, Oregon, state police stumbled across a suspected meth lab Monday while searching a Madras home on an unrelated matter. Ephrata, Pennsylvania. A milk truck overturned on Route 222 North in Ephrata. A hazmat team is working to clean up the frothy milk and diesel concoction, estimated to include 20,000 pounds of milk. Lafayette, Louisiana. A suspicious package that prompted an evacuation of a Target parking lot has turned out to be an empty piece of luggage. Mooresville, North Carolina. A Walmart store has been evacuated due to a bomb threat. Police and hazmat searched the store and cleared the scene, finding nothing. Eugene, Oregon. The duck store.
Hold it. Station manager Ken, you're out of time. Meth labs and overturned milk trucks. It's so hazardous out there. Now we go to the audience to see if they want a bonus disaster today. Audience, is it all too much, audience, or can you stand one more? They want another one.
Kapolei, Hawaii. A sulfur smell reported in Campbell Industrial Complex has turned out to not be a gas leak, but an additive put in propane called ethyl mercaptan.
There's your hazmat report for this December 13th with station manager Ken. As I mentioned, a dangerous world out there. Let's do our word of the week with Kurt Gottschalk.
Thanks, Clay. This week's word comes to us from Dr. Peter in Suffern, New York. Dr. Peter wrote in to let us know about the mystical origins of the macabre. Dr. Peter. The word macabre is derived from the biblical book of the Maccabees, which is included in the Roman Catholic and Eastern Orthodox canons of the Old Testament and in the Protestant and Hebrew Apocrypha.
Biblical Destruction Group didn't want the apocryphal books around because they had some pretty condemning information in them.
The text addresses the commemoration of people who were forced to renounce their religion during their lives.
God, be gone. I do renounce thee eternally.
In medieval times, Christians used to perform graphically violent plays about the Maccabees, whereas the silly French decided to do interpretive dances about them, the Dance Maccabee, or Dance of Death. And of course, it's because of the French that we spell it and pronounce it all weird to this day.
The apocryphal book.
Dance Macabre. Dance Macabre.
So who were the Maccabees? Well, they were a group of badass Jewish rebel warriors who seized Judea and ruled there from 167 to 63 BC, forcing the people who lived there to convert to Judaism. So God changing. They were led in their revolt by Judah Maccabee and his four brothers, and people in later generations adopted the name out of reverence.
Maccabee.
There's a lot of theories about where that name comes from, so we'll just leave it at that. Maccabee.
Let's go, you lit it. Now we shall revisit the burning bushes in your building, or perhaps you are forgetting. Let's go back to the beginning.
Moses.
A bush is burning and there is a voice within it.
Macabre in its current sense, as in gruesome or morbid, seems to have come into use in the mid-19th century in France.
Que tu allais peut-être tourner l'adaptation de Cobra.
Cobra, the film de Sylvester Stallone.
And the British picked it up a few decades later.
Glad to hear you say so.
Macabre.
Macabre.
And so, in this season of seasons, let's all be of goodwill and keep the macabre in our hearts. Happy Hanukkah, and back to you, Clay.
So we travel on the Babylon, stepped on, we got our gravel on, yet knowing we return, we build a temple to put our cattle on. Fire, fire, Ezra led the choir, Nehemiah will restore you, and the Torah will ignite you.
Nice, it's the second day of Hanukkah. I found out. Happy Hanukkah, everybody. That was Kurt Chucky Gottschalk, my buddy. And word of the week, macabre. I love that word, macabre. the phone, hopefully, is Kendra Heisler. Let's find out. Kendra, are you there?
Hi.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear you. How are you this morning, Kendra?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Was it early to get up for you? Be honest.
I mean, honestly, yes.
Kendra is the executive director of the Dream Street Theater Company. Kendra, and speak up a little bit if you could. It's awfully quiet, Kendra. Tell us a little bit about what you've got going on there.
Sure. So Dream Street is a nonprofit creative and performing arts organization.
Right.
For adults living with special needs.
Right.
And we have... Sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Okay, well... So we have a big show coming up this week. We put on two major productions a year and about 5 to 10 community outreach productions a year.
Right. And it says that you're a nonprofit that helps people with developmental disabilities pursue their passion for the performing arts. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Sure. So generally, people who have special needs or developmental disabilities don't necessarily have a platform to pursue these kinds of passions, and on top of that, are not recognized for their contribution and their talent in this realm. And we think it's quite significant what they can do, and we want to show people.
Right, because if you think about it, there's absolutely no reason why someone in that position would be any less talented or gifted than anyone else, correct?
That's right.
And what a waste it would be if they didn't have this platform. It's got to be awfully gratifying, isn't it?
Sure. I think that for me and for the staff, it's incredibly rewarding and one of the most wonderful things that we get to do, and we're certainly the lucky ones.
And have you seen some amazing talent emerge from what you're doing there?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Right. You know, years ago, I thought about this as I knew I was going to interview you. I got to interview Crispin Glover, the actor who many people will remember as George McFly from Back to the Future. But he did a movie in 2005 called What Is It? And the main character had cerebral palsy, but that was not so important. It was just another human being in a role with all of his fantasies and dreams and real life a romance. But it really forced the audience to think about what you're talking about people in this situation and really the lack of difference between us.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, I think it can be something that you don't necessarily have to look at if you don't want to.
Right.
But once you do, and if you do, it's one of the most incredible experiences, at least, in our opinion.
Right. Kendra, if somebody wants to get involved or participate in some way, how can they get in touch with you? How can they move forward with that idea?
Well, any of your listeners can have a discount to our show coming up this week. It's on Thursday and Friday at Roulette in Brooklyn, and you can get those tickets on our website. It's dreamstreetnyc.org.
Dreamstreetnyc.org, and you said that's Thursday and Friday?
Yes.
And where's Roulette at, Kendra? Do you have an address for us?
Yes, it's 509 Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn, New York.
Wow. It's really great talking to you, and I'm really excited about what you're doing there. I think it's really important work and gratifying, too, I'm sure. What are your parting words to all our listeners this morning? Kendra, with the holidays approaching them, what's your message of peace and love to the world today?
I would just say, I know that 2017 has been an interesting year for us all, and I think that when we think about inclusion, and peace, we could think about it in maybe more ways than we have before, and including more people than we had before.
Right, because we think about that inclusion in the news today and the different races and cultures around the world, but maybe not as much about what you're talking about, people with disabilities, and really it can just be another kind of prejudice, can't it?
Sure.
So if we want to be progressive, we have to be inclusive and keep moving forward. And you're part of that motion, Kendra, and we really appreciate what you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
You bet. Thanks so much for your time today.
Radio listeners, this is your favorite cheesemonger, Wendy Del Formaggio, with your weekly cheese report. Today we're going to talk about the outside of the cheese, the rind, and whether you can eat it. Eat it. Eat it. Some younger cheeses, like Brie, have thin, white or gray exteriors. You can eat those.
Do eat away because it won't hurt you.
Washed rind cheeses like Taleggio and Epoisse have sticky, orangey pink rinds. You can eat those too, but sometimes they're gritty and very strong.
Brian Shaw, world's strongest man, how do you feel?
I've dreamt about it, I've kind of ate it, slept it, and breathed it.
Stilton and some aged sheep cheeses look like stone or dirt on the outside. Don't eat that. Parmigiano has a thick, chewy rind. Don't eat it, but you can drop it in the pot when making soup. Then there's rinds made of wax, or ones that look like thin latex paint. Don't eat those. Honestly, none of the rinds will kill you, so try a bit. And if you don't like it, chew around it. Let anyone tell you the rind is the best part and shame you into eating it. That person is just being a dick.
Yeah.
Back to you, Clay.
Don't mince words, Wendy.
The Free Music Archive pick of the week this week is called Joplin's Plus One by Breakmaster Cylinder.
With a basic master cylinder in the braking system, any loss of fluid could mean the whole braking system fails.
A frenetic, experimental hip-hop take on The Entertainer by Scott Joplin, this instrumental track is packed with energy and has a nice, punchy interlude loaded with samples in the middle. If you've ever wondered what could be layered on top of a ragtime piano song to make it confusingly, delightfully modern, here's your answer. Get ready. Here's Joplin's Plus One by Breakmaster Cylinder from his recent album, I Wanna Hear the Music, brought to you by the Free Music Archive.
about dreams for a second. Do you have a lot of dreams? I feel like in general I have less of them the older I get. Now, I still have dreams for my life, for my marriage, my life with Kirsten. We still dream of the future, but I mean actual night dreams. And I've got Three Moons on the phone with me. Let's go ahead and see if we can hook that up. Three Moons, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hey, Three Moons, how are you?
I'm tired. I'm avoiding work this morning because it's too darn cold. It's 20 degrees here in Astoria. But so I thought I'd just make myself a little late for work and talk about dreams instead.
Do you have that kind of flexibility at your job now where you can come in a little bit late if you feel like it? Are you the boss?
No, I'm not. I'm actually just an hourly freelancer sort of thing, so they don't really care when we come in. But anyway, back to dreams, which is which I almost fell back to sleep and did this morning.
Okay, tell me about your dream.
Well, I've always had vivid dreams since I was a little kid. I was one of those people, I thought everyone always dreamed in color and always remembered their dreams.
Right, because you do.
And
you,
I still do.
You dream in color? Right, I think I dream in color, too. I've heard people dream in black and white, but I think I dream in color. What did you dream, Three Moons? Share it with us.
Well, some of my, I have all kinds of recurring themes in my dreams. The more interesting ones are recurring dreams of travel. I've been to Berlin a few times, and I love the city, and I keep, once in a while, I'll have this recurring dream where somehow our subway system and here in New York somehow got hooked up to some kind of express subway system with a ferry or something so that you could get to Berlin in a few hours, and then it's this kind of surreal Dr. Seuss Berlin that it's built layer upon layer, kind of vertically and horizontally, and it's places I remember and recognize, but nothing's ever in the same place. And another thing that always happens when I have one of those travel-related dreams is that it's always spur of the moment. Like, I'm supposed to be going to work, but there was something screwed up on the subway.
Right.
So I have to take a diversion, and that diversion gets screwed up. And, wow, before you know it, I'm in Berlin, and I think, well, you know, I guess I can't make it to work today, but I'm here in Berlin, but I don't have a guide, so I always... These dreams always involve a quick trip to a bookstore or, like, the German equivalent of a bodega to, like, pick up a local, like, map or something.
Right.
And
so they're kind of,
it's like,
they're kind of fantasy-oriented where they tie into things you enjoy and dream about, but yet there's that little thread of anxiety running through them, it sounds like.
Oh, yeah, there's a thread of anxiety through that, a lot of my dreams, for very good and valid reasons, obviously. We're all adults. We all have adult stresses.
Right.
The other dream that I have a lot of is going to a beach, and for whatever reason, there's like always some kind of either a tsunami coming or the tide is coming in, and there's these huge waves. And in these dreams, I always wind up under the waves, but I can always breathe underwater.
Wow,
it's the weirdest thing.
You can breathe.
Yeah.
And only
like, I don't dream about drowning. I just dream about, oh, wait, I'm going to get swept under this huge wave.
I used to do that when I was young. I thought... In my dreams, I could sit in a clothes basket and pick, you know, and pick myself up by the sides of the basket into the air. And then I thought,
oh, cool.
All I have to do is just remember this, and when I wake up, I'll be able to do it. Do you think, Three Moons, do you think our dreams are trying to tell us something, or are they just random?
Oh, no, they're definitely trying to tell us something. I mean... I'm exhausted on the weekends, and I tend to sleep like 10 to 12 hours a night, like on the weekends. And when I really get a deep sleep like that, I have really like intense dreams that I really remember.
Right.
And sometimes it's like after I get up and have a cup of coffee and I think about it, it's like, no, okay, this is obviously an issue that you're having with X, Y, or Z, or why did you think about this? Why did this dream happen now? And what's coming up that would have linked this person or this event to something that is currently going on in your life? And that kind of self-analysis, I find it's actually pretty useful sometimes. I mean, especially if it's with people who are currently in your life or your current work situation.
Right. Well, you know what, Three Moons? I dream of a time when we could talk endlessly about this subject, but I've got to run here and get back to the music.
Thank you so much.
What's your holiday message to the listeners, Three Moons? What's your
holiday
message?
My holiday message is try not to stress out so much. And even if you have holiday traditions that you might think are kind of a pain or visits that you make that, you know, you might be obligated to make for family reasons or whatever, try to make the most of the traditions that you have. don't impulse shop for gifts. Try to be thoughtful. Don't get cut off. Don't get financially caught up in buying one for you, one for me. I was guilty of that for years.
Right.
And otherwise, just try to take a deep breath. And, you know, 2017 is going to be over real soon, thank God. So just, you know, focus, take care of yourself, remember to breathe, and get plenty of rest.
And keep on dreaming. Thanks for the call. Hope you guys are still dreaming and having good dreams at that. Matt Warwick, little Matty Warwick, standing by soon. His torso will darken the doorway. Not yet, though. He's holding out. Today in history, Jesus. Tuesday, December 12th, 1787, Pennsylvania became the second state to ratify the United States Constitution 5 days after Delaware became the first. I say that because we've got a ton of Pennsylvania listeners. What else? In 1917 in Nebraska, Father Edward Flanagan found a boys' town as a farm village for wayward boys. 1946, a fire at an ice blast, a bummer. 1991, the Russian Federation gains independence from the USSR. 2000, the United States Supreme Court releases its decision in Bush versus Gore, the dangling chads, and the nightmare began. Birthdays today, Gustave Flaubert. The French novelist was born. And then the son of Flaubert. The son of Flaubert. Flaubert. 1963 Disney movie. Edvard Munch was born. The Scream on this day. The Norwegian painter Frank Sinatra. Hoboken. Jeez. 1915 Old Blue Eyes was born. And we didn't play any. Start spreading the news. I'm leaving today. Matty Warwick is darkening my doorway. He's coming in. Look at him, Jesus.
I wanna be a part of it. New York, New York.
Oh, like you.
If I can make it there, I'll make it. Anywhere, it's up to you. New York, New York.
Pennsylvania,
all it!
Connecticut.
Are we going to do all the states?
I would if we could, man.
Been listening to the Wake and Bake Morning Show podcast. Did you enjoy it?
Yes.
Good. It's a weekly digest of the special features and moments which make up the Wake and Bake Morning Show.
Woo!
After all, you wouldn't want to miss special moments like this.
Ah, you're in a good mood today, aren't you?
Oh!
The Wake and Bake Morning Show. Set your alarm and join us each Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 a.m. on WFMU.org. A little too early for you? Catch the archive show, which you can find easily on WFMU's homepage each day. I'm Clay Pigeon. They call me the Pigeon. Join me each morning for the full show, either on the radio or online at WFMU.org. And keep glistening.